America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Chilean Pennsylvania,
Patrick Hines.
Da-da-da. You have a little bit of a stuffed up nose.
Oh, yeah. I've come back from the dead. I've been dead from sinus infection for days. Literally, this is like my big day out.
I know.
I haven't been really out since Saturday.
I have been out since eighth grade.
You know, it's great when you set someone up like that and they just knock it out of the park. That's a sports reference.
Girl, before we get to the show, can we talk about Patreon? You guys, we just dropped our second full bonus episode. There's now two full bonus episodes. The second one is all about Truth or Dare. And like the reaction in the Facebook group has been everything I dreamed of.
When I was listening to it, I loved it. You're an editing genius, obviously. But I misspoke so many times because I was speaking so
we
fast.
We both were talking so fast.
I couldn't believe that we were talking about it. I had so much to say. I needed to get all of it out. But I was saying things. I was like, those aren't words. Like, what am I talking about? I'm like combining two words. I was having the time
it
of
was,
my life.
So the thing that makes this episode a little bit different is that Truth or Dare is a concert movie. So we used a ton of music from the movie. It's just so fun. Like, it's super fun. It's super funny. I think it's one of our best episodes.
It's great. We're thrilled.
We're
you can hear right. how absolutely excited and
yeah.
we are loving every second of
so,
it.
So, you guys, in addition to that, there's at least seven mini-episodes. We're doing one of those a week. We're doing a full bonus episode a month. Go to our website, click on the Patreon link if you want to join our Patreon community of, like, all this crazy bonus content.
Yeah.
Or you can go to patreon.com/truecrimeobsessed and join us there. Girl, what are we talking about today?
Sour grapes.
Sour grapes, you guys.
A bunch.
You asked for it. I loved this movie. I'm one of those people who, like, I love a good art heist movie. I love a good wine heist movie.
This is My Kid Could Paint That only with wine.
It's true.
Combined with Queen of Versailles from
yes.
our Patreon feed. Guess what? I hated Queen of Versailles. Hated everyone in this movie. You guys buckle up.
When you leave things unregulated, you allow the wolves to come in and game the system.
Prices were skyrocketing.
If I told you that you could turn your love of wine into an investment return.
Today, there is no relation between the prices and what is in the bottle.
20 grand for the bottle, and you want this.
Boom, a 1019.
We're talking about wine here.
The auction scene really started in the 90s. The
economy was booming back then.
Started being aware of this kind of guinea geeky young guy that liked wine.
He had this mysterious background.
He was like the Gen X Great Gatsby.
No one had ever spent that much money that fast. It was ruining the quiet little club that the old guys had.
Can you please state your name for the record?
Rudy Cornelwyn.
Stock market is down.
Dow traders are standing there watching in amazement. I don't blame them.
Everything with this fellow just kept coming up fake.
Fake wine.
In the catalog, it was already wrong and fake.
When you find a fake wine, it's a dirt.
The more we learned, the larger the epidemic became.
FBI agents came here. There's something serious going on.
I couldn't believe it.
Some of the biggest CEOs of corporate America were duped by this guy.
No way.
Who created him?
Hardly anybody could have done it.
That can't be Rudy.
Can I refill and put the cork back?
All right, can you start? I love it when you start us off because I never quite know where to begin.
Okay, well, you want to know the first line of my notes?
Yeah.
What the fuck is this? Lots of rich people drinking wine and getting hammered. The opening credits is just like this. We're at like an auction house.
Yeah.
And people are drinking wine. And they're so obnoxious. It's like, I thought that wine was a little forward. I'm like, what, did it grab your ass? Like, what are you talking about?
I could taste the Chardonnay in the palate. I thought it was a little forward.
I've got an elderflower, perfumed, juicy,
bright and leafy.
So I guess we should tell the listeners that I used to work in a super fancy steakhouse.
Oh, yeah.
So I lived in this world of, like, wine terminology forever.
What does she mean by saying it's a little forward?
Oh, God, it's been a minute. But forward means that it, like, it's...
It's bullshit. She... The answer that you just answered it for me. The answer is that she's trying to sound like she knows what the fuck she's talking about. You know what I kept thinking of this whole time? That episode of Parks and Rec where Leslie Knope is ordering wine and she's like, I'll have your cheapest glass of white wine because I can't tell the difference. Yeah. Totally. Put me in that world. Put me back in Pawnee, Indiana with Leslie Knope and Andy Dwyer just hanging out. I don't need any of this bullshit.
So it's funny. We meet this guy whose name I'll never be able to pronounce, but I just call him like fancy wine guy. He's French. He's from Burgundy.
Wine is alive. It's not a beverage. It's not a tool. It's not a table or a plate or a car. It's alive.
Laurent Ponce. Ponceau.
Whatever.
It's spelled Laurent Ponceau. My queens is showing. Oh, it's Laurent Ponceau. I saw Laurent Ponceau down at the Dida, and he was telling me about this new Burgundy that just came in.
I am Laurent Ponceau, winemaker, vigneron in Burgundy.
So anyway, I call him fancy wine guy.
Yeah, that's exactly. He is from Burgundy, France.
Right.
He's an actual fancy wine guy. That's his job.
So you guys, we grow to love this man, but how much did we hate him right from the beginning? Because he said things like this.
As soon as I started to breathe, I had the smell of wine. And I can say I have some blood in my wine, not some wine in my blood.
It was a, oh, this bitch moment. I was like, and then I felt bad about it because there are plenty of people to hate.
I know,
but poor Lauren is not one of them.
Lot 982, Romanée Comté, 72, two bottles. Wow, 9,000.
Now we learn about the, quote, auction scene.
You guys.
Through this guy, Jay McInerney,
Jay McIrish. Jay McPass the whiskey, fuck the wine. Can you tell I haven't been out of the house in a week? I'm so excited to be here.
Are we allowed to say that?
I'm half Irish. It's fine. I'm half Irish and half Italian. I'm the authority on both things.
I guess the auction scene really started in the 90s in the dot-com boom. Everybody was making money. They developed this culture of very wealthy collectors gathering at these auctions to see and be seen, to be seen bidding. The prices started to really escalate.
So he gets these emails and he's like, I don't know where these emails are coming from. And I'm like, girl, look in the sender.
I started to get these emails. It was strange. I couldn't really figure out where they were coming from. They described these evenings where these guys, very wealthy collectors, were drinking like 1945 Romanée Comté and 1955 Petrus, you know, really, really expensive wine. I eventually learned that these emails were coming from John Capon, the head of the auction house, Acker Merrill Condit.
What John Capon introduces our journalist friend to, and now us, is the angry men. Flames on the side of my face. heaving breaths. That's Clue reference, you guys.
Where the Angry Men name came from is you get invited to a wine dinner and you bring a really nice, a great bottle of wine, okay? And everybody else brings shit wine, bad wine. And so you get very angry. And it was men who didn't want to be angry anymore and everybody had to bring it, you know, you had to really bring it.
And they would be the only people bringing fancy wine, and then they'd have to deal with the shit wine, and they would be so angry about it that they had to start their own stupid club, and they would all bring super expensive, unnecessarily expensive, yes, bottles of wine, and drink and eat their faces off. So one of the angry men, now we're in Los Angeles, his nickname is Hollywood Jeff. Jeff with an F, with one F.
One F.
He looks like Steve Bannon.
Yes.
We missed the tequila party last night, but, you know,
I think it was worth it.
It was worth it, yeah.
I drank a lot of that 1907 Madeira last night.
What we're seeing is these two guys in the back of a car, like an SUV, drinking wine. They are using the most ridiculous adjectives to describe this wine. For example.
Yeah, I mean, it was coconut, it was nutmeg, espresso.
Yeah, it was really layered, wasn't it?
Watching these documentaries always makes me, I could feel myself getting so riled.
Yeah.
I don't understand. It turns me into such a narc in a way. Because I'm like, there are 800 laws against this. They're not just drinking wine sneakily in a water bottle like normal people. What they're doing is when you have wine on the go.
Yeah. We call it a roadie.
Right. You do what you have to
do. You take a roadie. Right.
What they're doing is sitting there with these gigantic, whatever you drink, you would know, those big red glasses that you drink red wine out of so that you can like swirl it.
Oh, it's wine. A burgundy glass. That's literally a burgundy glass.
Great. Yeah. It's a burgundy glass. Great. It's a little forward. They're drinking, you guys, they are in a car.
Yeah.
In a car.
Yes.
With an open bottle of wine, with these giant, and burgundy glasses, back me up on this, they're huge.
They're like bowls.
They're drinking out of that in a car.
I know. And then, all of a sudden, there's recommendations about the vintage of champagne to buy.
96, though, is the vintage to buy. For anyone out there, buy 96 champagne all day. If you can't afford that, buy 02. If you can't afford that, drink fucking beer.
All day.
I can't. It's Hollywood. I'm Steve Bannon. So the poor man, Steve Bannon, which yikes. And this total like Don Jr. lookalike douchebag.
Totally.
I don't catch his name. I don't care. It doesn't matter. They're drinking in a car. You guys, I know it makes me sound like such a narc and such a mom, which you guys know I'm not, clearly. Open containers in a car, like nobody gives a shit.
Know.
They're just drinking, swirling the burgundy. I'm like, even if that's a Lyft or a car service,
you
it's
still illegal.
Can't
I know.
Do that.
No, the thing
guys,
is,
a water bottle or a spiked Gatorade,
it's
like everybody
a
else.
I can't.
God.
I don't have time to explain
Jesus.
This.
Jesus.
So these two guys are hammered. It's the middle of the morning.
I enjoy a cocktail before cocktail hour from time to time. That's not my issue here. My issue is that he perpetuates this bullshit.
I think the 88 has so much acidity, it can be incredible. But it's a more hit or miss vintage than
the 88 that. Has a huge amount of acidity.
No, that's absolutely right.
My last note on this section just says, can these assholes get swindled yet?
We're 4 minutes in. 4 minutes into the documentary, 8 hours into the recording. I am so here for it. I'm not calling him Hollywood Jeff. I'm calling him Jeff with one F.
Okay, fine. Totally.
Okay. He's the one who introduces us to our like, I guess, like the villain, the evilest of all the evils here.
Yeah, the protagonist.
Whatever. Rudy Kernayawan.
Yep.
Henceforth known as Rudy.
Totally.
My entry into Burgundy was Rudy Kernayawan. There was an angry man that Rudy had invited me to. And that's where I met that whole gang.
So we meet Maureen Downey. She's literally a wine consultant. And I actually kind of love her. She explains later that, like, she is a woman. She's, like, a powerful woman in the wine world.
Right.
As dumb as the wine world is, like, she's a woman in a man's club.
What Maureen Downey explains is this concept of fuck you money.
Ugh.
Which...
What these guys actually had, it's what Americans call fuck you money. Well, I got a $3 million bonus. I'm going to take $1 million of that and blow it. And that's their fuck you money. They're going to do whatever they want with it. They don't care. There's no consequences. And it's a kind of money that most human beings never experience.
She's the one who is telling us more about Rudy. And when she first saw him, he was buying this like particular kind of Merlot.
At the time, he was somebody that was bidding on Paul Meyer Merlot. Paul Meyer Merlot sticks out in my mind with Rudy. You know, high quality wine, but... You know, it's got 10, not 40.
Well, I love that her wine snob shows because she's like, here's this geeky kid drinking California Merlot. And I'm like, I saw Sideways. I know that Merlot is garbage. Come on. If Paul Giamatti has taught me one thing in this life, it's that we don't drink any fucking Merlot.
If they want to drink Merlot, we're drinking Merlot.
No, if anybody orders Merlot, I'm leaving. I am not drinking any fucking Merlot.
All right, so now we dive into Rudy from footage from 2002.
Yeah.
And basically, it's everyone else in the documentary saying that he had, like, an insane knowledge of wine.
Part of what created his mythology was he had an extraordinary palate, the best palate of anyone I've ever met in my entire life.
And then we meet another, quote, movie producer,
right.
Arthur, who produced...
Rush Hour.
Rush Hour.
Good way to go.
Great job.
You achieved
whatever. My favorite, I hate all of them. My favorite quote so far, 10 minutes into the movie, is Arthur being like, people in LA are full of shit, but not Rudy.
People in this town, excuse my language, are full of shit. But not with Rudy.
Just wakes me up. You know?
Nothing he did was short of real class, warmth, and graciousness.
You know what's also weird, too? Everyone in this movie so far, Jeff with eight Fs,
yeah,
and Arthur Rush Hour, they all keep talking about Rudy in the past tense, yeah, and then correcting themselves.
Totally.
He just was a lover of wine. He's a lover of wine. I keep talking in the past because it's just still very strange.
But that's actually kind of cool because I hadn't seen the movie before, so you don't know if he's dead. Did he kill himself? Did he run away? Like, who knew? Well, you don't know what happened to him.
Yeah.
So now we meet reporter Corey Brown. I really thought this was going to go to another place. I thought she was going to be the one to crack the case.
I thought we were going to see a lot of Corey.
Me too. We don't see her. We don't, but she's the first one to really point out how weird this is, that what's happening.
It took months to get him to sit down and have a cup of coffee with me. It was like another month or two before I got him to sit down and actually have an interview with me.
So this is what people claim Rudy's family did.
Yeah.
So Rudy seemingly, I mean, he's at these auctions, he's buying all this wine, seemingly has this endless flow of money. Where is it coming from?
Right.
He lived with his mother in Arcadia, and the people around him would say that his family owned the Heineken distributorship for all of China. Fabulously wealthy, and he was on $1 million a month allowance for his wine. And when I asked Rudy about this stuff, he said, I don't talk about my family. And he wouldn't tell me anything.
This is where it's like, wait. It's like a really explosion where you're like, wait, really? And then he was on a $1 million a month allowance just for his wine.
I mean, the thing about it, like,
girl,
the world in
should be so lucky.
I know, but the world in 2008, like, I feel before the big crash.
It was literally minutes before. It was 30 seconds before
it was,
the world.
But I feel like people believed that this was the way that some people lived, you know?
When we drink wine, we don't look at the price value, you know? We look at what we get from the wine, the excitement, you know? The passion, the way they make the wine and everything. It's not about the price of the wine.
Our girl Maureen tells us that, like, here's what Rudy did.
He was cornering the market in a lot of these wines. What a clever thing to do. If you have a lot of money, go in, buy up a lot of wine, drive up the prices, and then start selling at the new high price.
Now we meet Bill Koch. When do you have to pick up Daisy? I can do this all day.
Just quickly tell the people who he is.
Okay, so Bill Koch is the brother of the Koch brothers.
Yeah.
Who are the activists, Charles and David. They're not activists. They're fucking nightmares.
Yeah.
So they are horrible people. And Mike is a political junkie like you.
Yeah.
And now everyone is, right?
You guys,
right? Let's get on it.
Thank you for not listening to Positive America and listening to our podcast.
Yeah. I was like, I need like a couple sentences about how garbage the Koch brothers are, because I was like, I can't articulate it. So here's what Mike, I was like, text me because I need it.
Mike wrote this for you?
Super hot husband Mike said, the Koch brothers are massive Republican donors who basically buy policymakers like we buy light bulbs. They're on the wrong side of every issue you can imagine. Social issues, climate change, certainly campaign finance, you name it.
I'm going to go on record. I think that they supported gay marriage, but I'll have to fact check.
It probably finances their guns or whatever.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, they're all awful. But this guy, Bill, he's kind of a character.
I'm glad he's not one of like the two Koch brothers.
Totally, yeah.
Because that sort of softens the blow a little bit. Because
right.
If you didn't do your research or know who he was, you'd be like, look at this guy.
I know.
Look at him.
You want to see my wine bathroom?
All right. So he has a wine bathroom.
Bill, give us a tour.
A bathroom is generally a bathroom, but I thought it'd be more fun to make it interesting. So we put wine crates here, wine labels, corks on the ceiling. And then if you look over there, there are wine bottles on that wall.
Thought it would be fun. I have a normal bathroom, and you can have a wine bathroom. He also has four bottles of Thomas Jefferson's wine from 1787.
This shit is real. Thomas Jefferson has signed the bottle.
Here's one bottle of Jefferson wine, 1787 Lafitte, THJ. The reason I wanted to buy four bottles of Thomas Jefferson wine is very simple. The mere fact that Thomas Jefferson owned it and held it in his hand, et cetera, et cetera. That's part of history.
He is literally holding in his hand something that Thomas Jefferson held in his hand. That's, I can't even imagine what that would
be. I make
like
a Hamilton podcast. I hear you. Thomas Jefferson was also garbage. I know. But it's still like at that time.
Wait, can we just explain really quickly that Thomas Jefferson was a full-on slave owner and had like a mistress named Sally Hemings?
She was not a mistress. She was a victim.
She was a slave and was his like...
She was abused by him for many, many years. He's a nightmare, but he also did annoyingly great things. Mm-hmm. It's a fucking bummer, you guys.
All I'm saying is that I understand the want to like hold history
in
your
hands. History, absolutely.
That's insane that he has that.
So now they sort of sprinkle in Maureen again. So she sort of explains, I like how they sort of sprinkle her in because she's explaining how you can tell fake wines.
You're looking for anomalies. Is it in the right glass? Does the cork have the right stamp? Is the cork properly aged? Is the paper correct? If these things have allegedly been together for the last 60 years, they need to look like it. If the capsule looks like hell and the label looks pristine, that doesn't work. You know, that's got a 95-year-old's face on a teenager's body.
This is so interesting. This is why you get Facebook group. I get it if you were bored by this documentary, but this is why I kind of love it because it's very Inspector Gadgety how she figures it out.
But it all seems so obvious to me. Am I crazy?
Yeah. No, I get it.
Where she's like, the cork has to be aged the same as the label and the bottle has to be heavy. And I'm like, no shit. But you would think, I don't know, I don't have fuck you money, but you would think if you're spending tens of thousands of dollars on something, you'd be looking at every piece to make sure.
See, I think it's the opposite. When it's literally your fuck you money, you just don't give a shit.
No, that's right.
Okay, we need to talk about John Capon for a second. If you remember, he's the guy with the wine store. So what they say is that his little wine store decides to get into the auction business.
Acromero wasn't a big house. They were a store that got into the auction world, and then Rudy really made them.
Within 3 years, they become the number one wine auctioneer in America. They sell more wine than anybody else. And it's basically all of it is Rudy's collection.
Once again, Rudy is shaking up this scene.
John really turned it into a fun thing. He was the first one to like break it out. It was like a giant crazy party with an auction. At the same time he was doing that, Rudy came along with this incredible seller and they kind of helped each other.
You know what I just got stuck in my head?
What?
Oh, look at all the lonely people. They're just lonely, bored, fucking rich people.
It's true.
Speaking of rich, bored people, Bill Koch has an investigator specifically to make sure that his wine is on the up and up. You know why? Because he just doesn't like being swindled. It's like you're related to the Koch brothers.
I know. So Bill learns that he has what he calls an epidemic. It hits a little close to home based on our recent episode. But
Bill,
he has an epidemic of fake wine. Bill, tell us how much you have.
I have over 400 bottles that are proven fake, for which I paid $4 million.
His investigator, Brad Goldstein, he calls this guy a bulldog. I actually love this guy.
I love him and his dog.
I was thinking, I wrote it in my notes.
Sorry, guys. Percy, you're looking for food. I got nothing for you. Percy, get out of here. Come on. Bill kept saying to me, I want to know how deep this problem is in my cellar.
We had to find experts that knew about corks. We hired a guy who knew about labels, capsules, glass, and even looked at the glue.
But we're going to be with Brad for the rest of the movie.
I love Brad.
I love Brad. Like, I'm so glad you love Brad.
Oh, I love Brad. Okay. Again, Mr. Koch literally hires Brad. Brad hires a team of CIA officers to get to the bottom of this wine mystery.
Fuck you, money.
All right, so now we're in Burgundy with fancy wine guy, the one who was talking about how, like, the wine for blood or blood for wine, like, he kind of was mixing his metaphors.
Lauren Ponsat.
Exactly. So we're in Burgundy, and he tells us how he picked up this auction catalog from 2008.
Mm-hmm. So basically everything in this catalog is fake.
Right.
He's going page by page. He's like, that label's bullshit. This is fake. Only it sounds super fancy because he's French. But he's like, that, nope.
And when you see the pictures here, there is a 1929 Claude Laroche. Ponceau started estate bottling in 1934. So first of all, in the catalog, it was already wrong and fake. Everything here also is fake. This wax we never used. We never sold any wine to Nicola. We never had this vintage printed outside the label here.
You guys, his, just real quick, his winery and vineyard, whatever, is so fancy. It goes back so many years.
Generations, like to the 1800s.
Right. This truly is his livelihood. He's not some rich guy who just is doing this for fun. This is his life's work and his family's work. But it's so good and so fancy that this is like the main wine that they are trying to trick people into buying.
Right,
exactly. So they're faking his wine because it's that good.
And selling it with his labels. And he's like, this is where he's like, I'm getting to the bottom of this.
He's like,
yeah.
Just imagine this, but French.
When you find a fake wine, it's a dirt on the integrity of Burgundy. And I wanted to wash it. So 2 days later, I jumped into a plane and I flew to New York.
A week later, there's this like fancy wine auction. So like they are, and of course there's like video. I don't think it's video of this actual auction.
I don't think it is either.
Because they talk about how insane this actually becomes. But like you see video of Capon at the auctioneer stand and you hear about how like it gets so crazy in there that he's telling people to shut up.
This particular auction was just a wild affair. We were all really, really buzzed on really expensive wine.
Then break, get that hero bell warmed
this,
up.
I was going to say, this hero bell. Our French friend is like Larry Kramer. She's turning this car around.
Yes, I totally have in my notes, oh shit, Dad's here.
I happened to recognize a guy who came in and sat at the back of the room. And he was not part of the merriment. You know, sort of like Banquo's ghost.
Because everyone is like drunk and partying at an auction, you guys. And he's just like lurking in the background. Hero, this is Hero Bell. So Larry Kramer, you know, because you know Larry Kramer was also at the boil, just ready to scream plague and just bring the whole thing down.
Suddenly, Ponceau stood up and there was silence. He said, withdraw my wines and John and everything. John like was at the podium. It was a bizarre moment.
Our French friend is like, withdraw my wines! And it is so Larry Kramer. It is Hero Bell. It is amazing. And really, the record scratch, the party is fucking over.
Capon announced the entire 30 on lots were being withdrawn.
But of course, our French friend is so like nice about it.
Oh my God.
He really just wants the right thing to happen. So our French friend like approaches John and is like, Monsieur.
Yeah.
And John is like, no, Rudy, you want to talk to Rudy? You want to talk to Rudy? So they do the Frenchest thing ever. And they go to Jean-Georges.
The next day, I met Rudy Kernowen for the first time. We go to Jean-Georges.
Have you ever been there?
Jean-Georges, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
Oh, Hero Bells, maybe?
Yeah. I had no idea of what would happen. He was just the owner of the wine. That's it.
My favorite part about this is that as he's telling the story, so they have him as if he's like sitting at the same table as he was with Rudy, and he's eating a croissant. It is so French.
The thing too about this guy is that he wants to give Rudy every benefit of the doubt.
My two options was he didn't know, or he knew and he wanted to sell it, and this is not nice.
And if he knew they were fake and he sold them, that is not nice.
Exactly.
Like, Frenchie.
After hello and so on, I said, oh, look, now, you have to tell me where the wines are coming from. You bought these wines, you should know. We buy so many wines. I buy so many wines, said Rudy, that I don't know where they come from. I have to check.
Then at the end of this dinner, Rudy's like, I don't know where this wine comes from, but I'll get to the bottom of it and I'll let you know.
Right. So our French friend realizes, all right, Rudy's become a really good bullshitter. So what he's going to try to do is become friends with him.
Yeah.
Or fake friends with him and try to act like he's on his side and maybe he'll spill the beans.
I had the idea that Rudy, he was doing a lot of dinners and parties, trying to have every client as a friend. So I said to myself, I'm going to do the same with him. Let him think I will become his best friend. And then he will maybe talk.
So now we're back to the investigator who works for the Koch brother.
Okay. You know what, Brad? I think you're great. I think your dog's great. I'm here for all of it. Hero Bells.
We had assembled a team of international talent.
International talent. Again, the good kind of rich. You know the bad kind of rich? International talent means some super illegal, probably not consensual shit is happening.
Right. So, Brad, can you tell us what you found out?
We had received some information about his immigration status. This is the 2003 U.S. Department of Justice removal proceedings for Rudy. He was living in the United States with a warrant out for his arrest. One of the letters to Homeland Security had the name of the business that Rudy and his brothers used to obtain visas to the United States. It's a series of small shops in Jakarta. One is a hardware store.
So building on this whole like international sort of thing, our fancy French Burgundy guy has been corresponding with Rudy via email to get more. He's like not letting it go. He's like, you got to tell me where the wine comes from. Mm-hmm. And Rudy sends him an email about a guy in Jakarta named Pak Hendra.
Right. So Rudy is admitting that, yeah, these bottles are fake, but Rudy had nothing to do with it. So he's just trying to pass the buck on where he got the bottles.
So fancy Burgundy guy goes to L.A. to like see Rudy again face to face and try to get more information.
Again, very quickly, I ask him, no, Rudy, face to face, eyes into eyes, tell me the truth. Who is this Mr. Pak Hendra? And he took his cell phone and he wrote two numbers in Jakarta. So I was happy. Then we had a nice dinner.
So the French guy, because he's a little bit of a beautiful tropical fish, like thinks that just because he has these numbers, they're totally legit. Let's have the dinner. I'll pay for this dinner. Like he gets the numbers right at the beginning and then pays for the entire rest of the night.
And like talks about what a great time they had.
You beautiful tropical fish. So the next morning, he tries the phone numbers. Neither of the numbers work.
Right.
But so because the phone numbers don't work, most people would be like, I don't know. I guess I'll Google it. No. Our French friend gets on a goddamn plane.
I know.
And goes to goddamn Jakarta.
I go very often to Asia and I know very well Asian people. And I have to tell you that the wealthy people from Jakarta are coming to Singapore and Taipei to have fun. So I knew a lot of these people from Jakarta. And I would ask, do you know of Mr. Pak Hendra?
And his whole thing is like, people aren't being nice. And they're not being honest. Like, I must put a stop to this. He's the French Columbo. I'm here for it.
Finally, I found out that Pak means Mr. and Hendra is like Smith. So this is the most used name in Indonesia. So I would ask, do you know a very rich family importing beer that would have a son in California that would love wine? Nobody knew about a family like that. So who is Rudy?
So at the same time, because Brad Goldstein, our investigator with the pup, is also on it because he's got the entire CIA working on this. He's like, we get wind that Rudy met with this French guy.
Yeah.
And he runs the numbers too. The numbers.
Don't fuck with billionaires.
You guys, I'm telling you, all the time and money in the world, and they're fucking bored.
The first number came back to an airline, Lion Air, the largest airline of Indonesia. Not a big wine collector. And the second number came back to a strip mall, Jalan Galamaja. Everything with this fellow just kept coming up fake.
So then we meet another hero.
Hero.
James Nguyen, FBI agent.
Yes.
My name is James Nguyen. I was an FBI agent for 30 years, 26 of which were spent investigating cases involving the theft of art or art fraud.
20 to 30 years in art fraud?
I love it. It's so fascinating.
Bro, where were you in My Can't Compete That? You were missed. And he was like, oh, how did I prepare for this case?
Well, I read the Idiot's book on French wine.
I literally read the Idiot's Guide to Red Wine.
I know.
Hero. Because these are all idiots.
I know.
It's really not that fucking hard.
The thing that Nguyen tells us, he goes through all of Rudy's finances.
And
he
emails. And if you thought I didn't type them out, I know. You'd be wrong.
So we learned that Rudy is totally broke. He's doing that like whole Ponzi scheme thing where he's like borrowing money from somebody to pay somebody else.
What emerged for me was how desperate Rudy was for money. He's putting people off. He has a deadline. He's supposed to pay someone. And he's procrastinating because he doesn't have the money.
And he's also like a twerpy little kid.
Right.
Because one of the emails that they show, and they don't say it, but you guys, I typed it out. Don't worry about it. It says, hey, Dave. This is from Rudy. Hey, Dave. I am just really in need of $3 million to pay bills immediately. I'm in really deep shit. Can you help me while we wait on others? Also, you guys, typos. I can't even get into it. Please advise ASAP at your convenience. Thanks, THX, Rudy. P.S. Please, PLS. Don't get pissed at me. ... Sad face. Cue Eleanor Rigby. Look at all the lonely people. It's just, I mean, please. me.
I know.
This is someone who changed the wine auction game. He's this little kid.
And it's also
with
like
no
this
money.
Guy that, like, these idiots who say how much they're always talking about how much they love him, know nothing about him. They think that he's on $1 million a month allowance from his family.
Wow, that one, I felt that. Did you feel the pressure on that one? That was a
that
real...
was like a Richter scale. Mm. So basically, like, the Coke guy, you know, the rich guy, his lawyers are coming for Rudy. And they depose him. So this is like, we actually get to see this deposition.
Mr. Kernighan, who inspected these bottles?
Well, we basically have, we basically drank a lot of these bottles with a lot of different people, including critics, experts, auction houses, and whatnot.
And I'm assuming he's there voluntarily. But, like, the investigator guy with the dog that you love...
Brad.
...has this whole hilarious thing where he's like, they go through this deposition, we see video of it, and at the end of it, he's like, he didn't tell us anything.
He wasn't defensive. He was guarded, but, you know, friendly. He's a hail fellow, well-met kind of fellow. Never definitive, nothing concrete. You know what? That guy told me nothing.
Everything is starting to unravel now. So right. Because he's being deposed, this is now 2011. He's being deposed. Everything is sort of falling apart. And John Capon isn't publicly selling his wine. Everyone is in the scene is starting to know there's an issue. But he's trying to find other ways to sell. Christie's
right.
took a huge auction, and so did Spectrum, which I had never heard of it. Probably. So this guy Don Cornwell, who we met earlier in the documentary, who was like just a wine nerd, like such a wine nerd. Bless
he's
her heart.
He's the kind of guy that like give him like a computer and a dark room, and he'd solve the Zodiac case. He's just like one of those computer nerds.
And guess what?
Yeah,
this is kind of what he did.
You know, the auction houses had gone from having high reputations to having apparently sold tens of millions of dollars worth of counterfeit wines. Spectrum wouldn't withdraw them, and they wouldn't disclose it was from Rudy. At that point, I went and published a warning. Boy, did this go viral.
So he's like, I'll handle this. So he goes on to a message board called, I don't know if you caught this, Wine Berserkers.
I did. And it immediately made me think of Vanguard News. I was just like, you know what I mean? Just like, it's just like another message board. But this one really takes off.
And they just want to talk about wine. So it's not garbage belt for them. It's garbage for the Nazis. So he writes this whole thing, like explaining what's happened. Yeah. Everyone's being duped, millions of dollars, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, boy, did this go viral. And I'm like, Don, good for you, girl.
Yeah, exactly. So in March of 2012, they go see Hollywood Jeff with 10 Fs.
I can't.
And the FBI had questioned Jeff before, but Jeff feels like this questioning was different.
And after they left, I went to the phone and I called him. As a friend, I thought I should warn him. I remember his very words. I said, the FBI was just here, Rudy, and I think they're really seriously. I can tell... The last time they came, they were just asking. This time, there's something serious going on, and I just want to let you know. And he said, don't worry, dude. I have everything under control. Those were his very words. Don't worry, dude. I have everything under control.
Cut to our friend, Wynn, Detective Wynn with the FBI, who is talking about now they're, like, going to Rudy's house. They go to the front door. They knock and announce, as they say. Knock and announce.
There was no answer. The team leader said, get the ram. And I thought, oh no, this is going to be a long day.
They're about to battering ram down the door. And then Rudy opens the door and they're like, he looked like he'd been sleeping all day.
Super disheveled. Wine was
everywhere.
When you walked in the house, the first thing you saw was wine everywhere in the living room and a huge wine refrigerator.
Then he said,
I was stunned. I mean, I could have been knocked over with a feather when I saw what was in the kitchen.
And it's crazy. Right. And he's talking about it, but they're showing pictures of it at the same time. And it's literally like you look in the sink and like he's soaking the labels off of wine bottles. He has this like super fancy corker machine. He says he had labels bundled like American currency.
There was everything you'd ever need to make fake wine. As an FBI agent, if I had listed the 10 things that I would have liked to have obtained from a search, this was 10 times 10 times 10 times 10 times 10.
He's literally like, this is perfect. Like, we have this guy.
Nailed.
We nailed him.
Yeah.
We nailed him. This is a gold mine. It's anything you'd ever need in your life to make fake wine.
Exactly.
And of course, cut to Steve Bannon and all these assholes being like, it just doesn't seem like Rudy.
He was the last He is the last person I would ever suspect of being able to do any kind of intensive arts and crafts. He is ADD. He doesn't have the attention span. It's a time-consuming, laborious thing to do, and he could never do that. I just could not see him doing it, and I still don't see him doing it, and I still don't believe he did it.
So, like, whatever. They start to do this thing where they're like, okay, this guy's a fraud. Where's the money coming from? We're going to go through this real fast. We find out that his parents are from Indonesia, and we know that his mother's brothers pulled off, like, the biggest bank heist in Indonesian history.
Yeah.
And then
it's, like, $780 million. One-tenth of it was recovered. They've right. never been, like, one of them broke out of jail. It's like, that's where the fucking money's coming
it's
from.
It's a family of scammers, and then it cuts to New York City where he's in jail. Listen, he's got a couple characters for defense lawyers.
All right.
Here's a wine over here, something that people have tasted that they're saying is the best ever. Well, if you can make something taste like that, why not recreate that experience? And I think that I think that's what happened.
They tried to make that sound like it was alchemy, you know, like he was mixing and matching and contriving. But that's not what I think it was at all. I think Rudy just really digs wine.
We didn't talk about this, but the French Burgundy guy comes to testify in the trial, and the best part of him coming to testify is when he says this.
At a certain point of my testimony, our eyes, for once, get in touch, and he smiled to me, and he made me a little sign with his head and smiled to me. I found it... bizarre, but in the meantime, nice. Yeah.
Whatever. It ends with Rudy in court. He gets sentenced to 10 years in jail. And outside the courthouse, one of his lawyers is saying to Maureen, remember our friend Maureen?
Yeah.
Is saying to Maureen that he has literally done cases with organized crime where there have been dead bodies and they've gotten less time.
Bragging. He's like, he says dead bodies. He's like, Maureen, dead bodies, dead bodies, dead bodies, Maureen.
I've had organized crime cases with dead bodies for less time. That's the truth. Dead bodies, less time.
Maureen does say to some press.
Like, he didn't profit from the crime as much as other people did. And the people who profited the most from his crime are living large and drinking great wine, and they're not in jail. And
which is kind of true. She's like, look, many people benefited from what he did.
Yeah.
And they're all still super rich and bored and annoying and totally. Obnoxious. But he's the one who has 10 years in prison. So, like, it is wine. It is stupid. But what he did was super premeditated.
Yeah.
Like, he is just like, I don't know. He's a dick.
At the end of the day,
and
they're
all dumb,
they're
rich
garbage.
Idiots. Like, I don't care. I don't care. God.
Girl, we got through it. That was amazing.
I mean, I still have a lot to say.
I know, me too. I have more to say too.
Can I say that my favorite part is at the end, Brad Goldstein and his dog are playing fetch, and Brad Goldstein, our investigator, is drinking beer, not wine. Yeah. This girl, he can't handle it. He's like done with wine.
You guys, just a couple of quick things. Check out our Patreon. We've got 2 full bonus episodes, 7 or 8 mini episodes. There's just so much awesome content on there.
For $5 Weasley dollars.
Exactly.
The Weasley family.
You guys, our outtakes this week were really long. We told a couple like short stories and stuff. So we're going to do our regular outtakes here, and then we're going to drop an extended outtakes into the Patreon feed. Jillian, where can they find us?
At True Crime Obsessed on the Twitter and truecrimeobsessed.com.
Where can they find you?
At Jillian with a G on all the things.
You can find me at Patrick Hines on Twitter, at Patrick Hines _ on the Instagram. You guys, we're taking next week off, but when we come back, we're going to do Crazy Love. Crazy, right? This is one of the ones you guys have asked for a lot. We're so happy to do it. So you guys stay tuned for the promo for Crazy Love and then our hilarious outtakes. And our palate cleanser this week is going to be Daisy's birthday song again. We love you. Bye.
Bye.
I really couldn't believe that this could be happening. Everybody was screaming. Was I frightened to death? I was already dead.
I had never seen a girl as beautiful as her. When
I go, she was always beautiful. Her skin was absolutely without a flaw.
Bert was not a very good-looking man, but he was a lot of fun.
Hi, how are you?
He liked to know me and meet me and see me and da-da-da, and I looked at him like he was a nut.
I gave him my phone number just to get rid of him. A day or two later, he said, "You want to go for a ride in my plane?" He is a lawyer. He owns a nightclub.
Sex was important to me.
He would ask every woman client, and she would either say yes or no.
He was too cheap to go to a motel.
I remained a virgin. Back then, you were called a tease. He even made me do something which is so outrageous.
Larry Schwartz was one of the guys.
And he said to me, "How would you like to go out tonight?"
Every girl who met him had a crush on him.
That was the first time I ever saw Linda show love.
Of course, that's what caused the breakup.
I said, "I just have no more patience with you. Get out of my face."
He just flipped.
He was always either on the phone or in her hallway. A lot of creepy things.
He said, "I will cancel the order to kill you if you have dinner and sex with me."
He said, "If I can't have her, nobody will."
I am now damaged merchandise.
I was arrested. Total 30 years in prison.
I felt it wasn't long enough.
It hit the headlines like crazy.
Was almost a little exciting for her.
I love you!
Bert was very sick.
They started to give me shock treatment.
Bert used to send me pages and pages of letters.
And I proposed to her.
Oh my God, this is even sicker.
Nobody is as visibly insane as Bert and Bukash.
Hey, listen, they say even Hitler had friends.
They're difficult. They're screaming and yelling all the time.
Bert, where's my coffee?
If it's a joy or a punishment, I really don't know.
Psychopath.
Like a sweet soul of a fire. Sensational.
Do your wife know what you're doing all the time?
Sinus infections, this is super interesting for everybody. Like 4 or 5 times a year.
Garbage!
Yeah. It's horrible. So Mike and I have been like out for the count.
I don't know why the garbage bell still gets me every time.
You know why? It's because it's become such an extension of me that I just like, it's just so easy now. Like, what is oaky? What is it?
Oaky I get because I love a crappy oaky Chardonnay. So that's my jam.
That weird buttery aftertaste of Chardonnay. Yeah, that's oaky. Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. I don't like things that are oaky. I know that.
This is my favorite
now.
Episode we've ever done. Do you know that I legit have a whistle register now that I didn't used to have? I legitimately can go like this. I can summon that at any time. I used to not be able to do that.
Hey, girl.
That's because of this podcast. Because if I didn't learn to laugh in an upper register, my head was just going to blow off my body.
You mean you didn't always live in that upper register, girl?
Oh, my God. Okay. And then you said that funny thing.
What funny thing? I can't keep track. You guys can't see the hair flip I just did, but it was really good. We're saying this as we're sipping on our $10 bottle of Chardonnay.
A big bottle of Chardonnay, by the way. We learned to call it a Magnum in this movie.
Right. I've always knew it was a Magnum. No.
Oh, okay. Well, look who's fancy now. So
you're being a little forward. You're being a little oaky, and you're being a little forward.
They're like balls.
They're so
big. Think about that Amy Schumer gif that goes around the gif.
Gif.
On a cold day in March, you were 6 days old when you pulled up outside. We didn't know what the future might hold when we saw you for the first time. We waited so long just to see you, just how you waited to see us too. Some families are big, but some are smaller. We're so happy that you're our daughter. You like ponies and climbing trees. Let's have a bowl of macaroni and cheese. Right in the subway, you say D for me. It's your special day, so get crazy. Happy birthday, Daisy. Happy birthday, Daisy. Through these 4 years, you're growing older. My, how the time has flown. With Daddy, other Daddy, Allie and Grover, we make the perfect home. We waited so long just to see you, just how you waited to see us too. Some families are big, but some are smaller. We're so happy that you're our daughter. You like ponies and climbing trees. Let's have a bowl of macaroni and cheese. Ride in the subway, you say, D4 me. It's your special day, so get crazy. Happy birthday, Daisy. Happy birthday, Daisy. Happy birthday, Daisy.